Hey, everyone. We are on Facebook Live, 1041 Nick Reed. Also at KSGF.com, you can subscribe to Spotify and iTunes. If you miss any of the program, we've got them archived also at KSGF.com. Tom Arts with us just moments. Don Luzader here now with the latest news update.
And good morning. The number of people hospitalized for COVID-19 in Missouri reaching another record, and the seven-day average positivity rate now more than triple the benchmark suggested by the World Health Organization. State Health Department's COVID-19 dashboard showed more alarming numbers, more than 1,875 new confirmed cases and 22 deaths. Now, that seven-day positivity rate is just under 18%. The national seven-day positivity rate is at 5.1%, according to Johns Hopkins University. And more than 1,400 people were hospitalized in Missouri on Wednesday. That is a new one-day record, and that record has been set for a third straight day. And nobody is hurt after an ambulance caught fire on a highway in Webster County. That ambulance catching fire in Diggins on Highway O and 60. The Ava Ambulance District, who owns the vehicle, says no one was hurt. Thankfully, everyone escaped safely. That loss is a major one for the district, which owns only 5 ambulances. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks. Home improvements, we've got a sunny day, high of 65, though that frost advisory in effect till 9 this morning. Tonight, clear 45, 73 tomorrow, and a 40% chance of showers on Sunday with a high of 63. Current temp, 33 here in Springfield. Tom Martz with us this morning. And are you in the area, or are you out and about?
Well, can I be philosophical with you for a minute?
Of course you can.
Okay. And there comes a time in one's life when their children get old enough to get married.
Yes.
And my oldest is getting married this weekend.
Hey, congratulations.
So we have a wedding reception, or whatever that thing is called, the wedding rehearsal this afternoon, and then a wedding reception dinner tonight, and then tomorrow he will officially be hitched.
Wow. Is he marrying up like you did?
Well, I definitely married up.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no doubt. It wasn't going to be any question.
Well, and it's lasted.
It has. We've been married this December. It will be 35 years.
That's a long time to be married to someone.
That's over half my life, man.
So is it a local wedding, or are you traveling?
No, we're going down to Walnut Shade or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sure.
Winery down there.
Okay.
That they're getting married at.
Well,
and she has a 12, 13-year-old daughter from a previous marriage, but the daughter has taken to my son quite well.
Nice. That's very nice.
Half the time we can't figure out which one's the more mature, the daughter or my son.
Well, that's good, because that can always be difficult, particularly kids that age. So that works out nicely, and congratulations to them and to you. And it's a very pretty area down there, so I'm sure you know that. But
it's a beautiful area, especially now since the leaves are changing, and you know, my wife's, well, just about every relative I can think of is in town for this. So and it's been a while since we've seen the whole family, and we're trying to get the in-laws to get out of California and move them back here. So I've already informed them they are not allowed to vote the way that the people out in California vote.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Don't need to bring that disease here.
No, it's already here. Decades.
There really should be PSAs. Every time it seems like spring rolls around, you'll hear these PSAs about not bringing firewood in from out of state because of the, I think the ash borer. Is that the one that they worry about? Or just invasive species that may be in one state. And so they're like, don't bring wood, don't bring firewood in from other states because it could invade what we've got here in Missouri. And maybe something like that needs to be done in terms of people's political beliefs, because they leave diseased areas refusing to acknowledge why it's diseased, and then they inject here into our area that disease.
We could build a wall.
Yeah, could do that. Now, I'm sure you have been thoroughly impressed with the questioning of Amy Coney Barrett over the past week.
Actually, I Because of her, I actually did some background analysis. And what I find disturbing is I think the last judge that was asked a question, a hard question, about an opinion that they formed on a case while they were actually on the bench was Justice Bork.
Yeah. I guess they learned.
Has been, well, I think, see, I'm going to come at this at a different direction. Yeah. I think they actually do agree with Amy Coney Barrett 90% of the time when she writes an opinion or rules from the bench. It's only that 10% of the time that they actually disagree with, so that's what they attack her on, abortion and religion.
Well, it's appears they have fully acknowledged it's a foregone conclusion. There's not, it's rare that Democrats seem to surrender, and they appear to have done so. Although saying that, this court packing deal, I suppose perhaps it's an extension of this, and they see this as a battle, not the war. And while they may surrender this battle, they see the war as long term. It's the long game, and they'll just start adding justices. And Biden is, it's clear that he won't prevent that from happening. He'll do whatever because he will not say that he won't. He tap dances around it, and I think most people know why. And I, even that being said, to me, intellectually, I think most people comprehend that that will be done, but there's still this feeling that it won't actually happen, maybe. I think when it does, the people who even knew it was going to happen will be like, I can't believe this is happening, if that makes any sense.
Well, I found it quite odd that Stephanopoulos, you know, he challenged him on that, mm-hmm. and Biden said that the voters will know before they start voting.
Well, they've already started voting.
which is where I was going.
Yeah.
Apparently, Joe has not been told or been informed that there are already people voting. Mm-hmm. Because I just saw the other day that a line longer than five people is voter suppression. So you can bet when I go to the polls on November the 3rd, when I go to vote, if I'm standing there longer than 5 minutes, I'm going to start screaming my head off about voter suppression.
Only in the world of the left can a record number of people coming out to vote be voter suppression. For, you know, I mean,
but you know, they've got the people on their side convinced,
yeah,
that all they have to do is yell voter suppression, and right, all of a sudden it's that's exactly what's occurring. Kind of like this QAnon thing and the white supremacy thing. And I mean, you know, I travel quite a bit, and I travel quite early in the morning, and I would think if white supremacy was in its heyday, somewhere down along the line, I would see evidence of crosses being burned in front of people's houses or out in fields or Klan rallies occurring. You just can't hide those things.
Well, you must be able to, because it's happening everywhere all the time. We just don't see it. They've become very good at this.
Must be in those deep underground bunkers that we're not aware of, QAnon built.
Yeah. Tom Hartz with us. We're going to get a traffic update. Continue on here. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed. Mr. Tom Hartz with us this morning. I want to play a story that aired, I know, on KY3, and I was told it was also going to air on Color 10 last night, and it's regarding the very first girl. She's actually a foreign exchange student, the very first girl in Ozark School history to qualify for states in singles tennis. And she was told it had to do with an exposure to COVID, even though she's negative. And they were saying, oh, yeah, you're cool to play, and then ripped it right out from underneath her. And here's the story that aired last night.
Last night, we told you about an Ozark tennis player who qualified for the state high school tournament. But she was exposed to the coronavirus. She was still holding out hope she'd be able to play. But Shoshana Stahl explains why she has been told now she'd have to miss her match.
Obviously, if I have COVID or I feel sick or something, for respect, I understand, like, okay, I can play because it's dangerous for other girls or whatever, but I feel good and I know I'm good.
Melissa Peralta Sanchez is the first girl in Ozark school history to qualify for states in singles tennis, but a COVID-19 exposure stopped her from playing today. Last night, we told you that if she got a rapid test this morning and it came back negative, she'd be able to play in the tournament.
I feel better if they, at the beginning, if they say, like, no, or they say yes, but they never have, like, a good reason. So they always say, like, oh, maybe you can play if you do this or whatever.
Peralta Sanchez got ready this morning and on her way out the door, got a call that even if she did test negative for COVID-19, she wasn't allowed to play at states. She sat behind a girl in class that exposed her to the virus, and although she's already had two negative tests, she hasn't completed her 2 weeks in quarantine.
If one of the students is positive, then that creates a high-risk exposure to the other students.
The Ozark School District says if students are exposed to a positive case for longer than 15 minutes and within 6 feet, they're required to quarantine for 14 days.
There's not any way for us to look at and evaluate ending a quarantine in a shorter period of time.
As a foreign exchange student from Mexico, she says she wanted to make her coach back home proud of her while she's here.
He knows, and my family knows, and the people who knows me knows that I have more than that. So that's why I feel like I want to play.
In Ozark, I'm Shoshana Stahl.
Now, the information that I've received is saying that the school was fine with this, and what happened was the story, as Lisa Rose, you know, she mentioned, you know, we aired a story. They were airing a story about Melissa the night before, and you know what a great thing this is—the first Ozark, you know, first in Ozark school history, and so forth. And that the Christian County Health Department saw this story and called the school, and according to the information that I've been given, essentially instructed them, you will not allow her to participate in this. And that's why the school then had to call her and renege on the assurances they gave her that she would be able to play if she tested negative. And, you know, it's like, here's a young foreign exchange student comes to the United States, supposed to be land of freedom, and here's your howdy-do.
Is she playing in a doubles match?
No, it's singles tennis.
Okay, so if I remember viewing tennis on the television,
right,
set, it's
yeah.
a big court. It's got a net in the middle. One person's on one side, one person's on the other. So exactly who is it that she's going to be around that's going to be within 6 feet of her?
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's, to me, absurd. Not to mention, you're talking about a person who is in a category of people that are virtually immune from fatality when it comes to this, particularly those who are healthy, which clearly she is. She's athletic, she's healthy. And to take an individual that is amongst those who are least likely to suffer any sort of you know, real harmful, detrimental effects that will easily be able to stay socially distanced from people in this particular sport, and to do that, it's just, it lacks any sort of common sense. And part of it is just frustrating to me too, and not to overplay it, but some of these events that young people participate in make a big difference when it comes to the path that they're going to take in life, you know, winning a tournament, doing something now, as you know, as a foreign exchange student, I don't know that it would have any long-term impact on, you know, her path in life, but this with such ease, dismissing young people's pathways that they will take that can lead them on one journey versus the other for such apparently foolish reasons. It's just heartless and it doesn't make any sense. And it's just, you know, you hate seeing this sort of thing.
When did the Christian County Health Department suddenly become the Christian County School Board? Or the Ozark School Board?
Right. Yeah. You know, well, there are certain powers, and if you have a government entity that starts, you know, making threats of lawsuits or something along those lines. How you get people, they get worried, they get scared, and then they back down. They think, well, it's not worth it. And then, of course, who suffers? The kid suffers. And you know, it's just, it's a shame to see this sort of thing happen because it's so unnecessary. You could.
I think she ought to scream discrimination.
Yeah, that one might as well give her a go. Give it a try.
She's Hispanic, right?
Yeah, yeah. She's from Mexico.
She's from Mexico.
Yeah. And try that route. See if it works. But it sounds, the information that I've received tells me that it, you know, again, that the school was perfectly supportive of her doing this, and they were going to until, like I said, you know, it really sucks because here KY3 is doing a nice story and how exciting for this family that's hosting Melissa. And for Melissa, here she is, a foreign exchange student in the United States, and she's on the news because she's accomplished something that's never been done in this school before. So she's made an incredible contribution, and rightfully so. You know, she's got to be proud of herself and so excited about it. And simply because, you know, the community gets this nice story to highlight her accomplishments, it gets ripped out from under her. Because it's a, you know, from what I'm understanding, that's how they found out about it, was it, there was a news story when Christian County Health Department found out about it. It's just sad. I mean, it's just sad.
Well, I mean, it's a tournament that she qualified for. It is a state of Missouri tournament, not a Christian County tournament. So if I'm her, I go. I just basically tell the Christian County Health Department, screw you, I'm going to states. Because you're a county, you're a political subdivision within the state of Missouri, and I qualified for states, I'm going. Because I don't think the state tournament is going to back down to the Christian County Health Department.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know what they would have done. And I don't know if this tournament was supposed to be yesterday or today. I think it was, so it may be too late at this point. But that would have been interesting to push it and say, oh, we're going to go anyway and see if they would have let her. Because here's the thing, you know, of all of the young people in that tournament, there are kids who have been just as much, if not even more, exposed to COVID-19 than Melissa has. I mean, you know, you know it.
Well, I'm not even aware of where Christian County Health Department thinks it gets its authority to dictate to one individual that they cannot travel to a state tournament to compete in an athletic event that she has qualified for.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not part of Mike Parson's executive order, unless somehow the Christian County commissioners gave the Christian County Health Department that type of power or authority. That's something that the people of Christian County actually ought to look into, though, in how their government
and what
controls and powers are given.
Well, and I think that this needs to be transparent, because part of the frustration that you have with parents, and this is very common in the school districts or with host parents, is oftentimes there's a lack of transparency as to why decisions are made. And it's my understanding that it was relayed to them that the school was fine with it until the health department called. Now, so I think that, you know, the health department needs to say whether that's true or not. You know, they may say, no, that wasn't our decision. They're just using us. Because we saw a similar situation in Springfield. And, you know, we had the gentleman on. It was a deal with his wife, and she was at Cox, and they weren't letting him see her. And they said, well, it's the county that won't let us. And so he called the county, and the county said, no, that's not true. It's the hospital. And then the hospital said, oh, no, actually, it's the governor. And so then they called his state. Well, it wasn't even his state senator, but, you know, tried to find out. And they said no. And so it was a lot of finger pointing with the county saying it wasn't our decision, the hospital saying it wasn't our decision. Now, eventually he was allowed in. And so, you know, is that what's going on here? Do you have a school district that's just pointing the finger at the county, or did the county actually do this? And this is part of the problem. Government has become so non-transparent, particularly when it's dealing with your kids, which is when they should be the most transparent, or with a child that you are responsible for. And you know, so you get a lot of this confusion. And again, the person who suffers the most is this girl who simply was living her life and not creating any harm. And because she was getting a nice little public pat on the back and a highlight because of, you know, making history for the Ozark School, she gets punished. And it's just an unfortunate thing. We've got Tom Arts with us. Another break. We'll have traffic with Don Luzader News as well. I'm Nick Reed, Springfield's Talk 104.1. Don Luzader, news update.
And good Friday morning. A group supporting Democrat Nicole Galloway's campaign for Missouri governor has raised more than $5 million. The Independent Political Action Committee on Thursday reported it raised and spent a little more than $5 million in September. Galloway is trying to unseat Republican Governor Mike Parson. Now, a pro-Parson PAC raised $2.6 million and spent about $6 million in the same time period. Those independent political action committees are raking in most of the money in this gubernatorial race. That's because those committees can accept unlimited donations from single donors. One man is in jail, another on the run after a series of break-ins over in Hartville. Derek and Joshua Vollner are charged with burglary in three separate counts. Deputies responded this week to report that 13 locks had been cut on storage sheds. The suspects were seen on video, eventually taking a weed eater and a toolbox. Derek Vollner has been arrested. Joshua still on the run. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast, sunny 65 for a high today, 45 for a low tonight, 73 tomorrow, with a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, high of 63 on Sunday. It's 36 and sunny here in Springfield. Tom Martz is with us. That story there is consistent, where you have a Democrat who is talking about Galloway and PAC money versus Parson and how she's got a lot more PAC money coming in. And as happens virtually every election cycle, you have a Democrat who denounces dark money, who talks about the evils of these PACs, yet far greater than the Republican rakes it in and uses it in order to try to get elected.
Yeah, I was kind of curious about that, because I have, and I am opened up to the KSGF.com website, and I went to the general election candidates and ballot issues page. And I found it quite interesting. We have on the ballot constitutional amendment number one, which we did not talk about last week.
Right.
Where it says, do you want to amend the Missouri Constitution to extend the two-term restriction that currently applies to the governor and treasurer to the lieutenant governor, secretary of state, auditor, and the attorney general? Now, I have not looked at this, but I'm going to assume that that was actually put on the ballot by the legislature, and the legislature needs to stop doing this crap. I don't see any reason why it is that the governor or the lieutenant governor, secretary of state, auditor, and attorney general should be to the point where they have the same terms. Now, under Constitutional Amendment 3, what I find interesting is the, I guess it's called the description of the bill, where it says, change the redistricting process voters approved in 2018 by transferring responsibility from drawing state legislative districts from the nonpartisan state demographer to governor-appointed bipartisan commissions, modifying and reordering the redistricting criteria. What makes an individual who is appointed by a state auditor, depending on which political party they belong to, nonpartisan?
Fairy dust. I used to work with this guy. Well, I didn't work with him, but he was a guest that would come on my show, and he was a former editor of a newspaper, and he was about communist. He thought Obama was too conservative. And he was one of these big believers that all campaigns should be funded by the taxpayers, and that, you know, everything would be decided by a panel of nonpartisan individuals, and districts would be, you know, and I would ask him, I was like, well, who's going to appoint these people? Well, you know, this person or that. So it was always somebody who was partisan. And I thought, there is no one who knows enough about whatever the issue is that these nonpartisans are going to be deciding who aren't involved in politics on some level. The only people who would be nonpartisan are people that have absolutely no idea about it. This is why whenever they pick juries, they make sure to pick people that don't know anything about the case, because they know if they know about the case, there's a good chance that they have an interest and that they've formed opinions about it. So to say that you're going to take some magical person who has no concept of this, so they have no opinion, and put them in that position to do it, it's just, it's fanciful.
Yeah, because in 10 years, depending on who's running the auditor's office, they'll choose another demographer who happens to be more along the lines of where they are politically. That's how you end up with these different health departments and all these different local political entities. Anytime that there's a hiring or anytime there's an appointment, they're going to hire an individual who ideologically are more aligned with them than they are going to hire somebody who is more politically or ideologically not aligned with them.
Well, and what would also happen is, okay, so let's say that a Democrat puts someone in there, and then, time goes on, and then a Republican is going to replace, then the Democrats would start pitching a fit that, well, that person's too partisan. Well, wait a minute. I thought the whole point of this position is that it can't be partisan. You know, that's what they tell us, that magically there's absolutely no way possible for this demographer to be partisan at all. This is this magical person, and magically no one will ever appoint someone to this position that will be partisan. And the sad thing is, people believe that. they I don't know what world. People just need to think this stuff through.
We've lost the concept of being able to think, and all you've got to do is look at the Politburo news agencies that we have covering not only the presidential elections, but covering every single thing that you can possibly think of. Because you were talking about Brian Rushing a while back when he wasn't allowed to see his wife when she was
right,
in the hospital.
Yeah.
And in reality, I mean, Clay Goddard and his department can basically say, no, it wasn't our fault. Yeah. They followed their own guidelines. But in reality, the hospital was following guidelines that were handed down by the county and the CDC.
Mm-hmm. Well, and what also happens, and I know this just because I know a lot of people in the medical community, but I also get a lot of people I haven't even met, but we communicate back and forth, and they say that sometimes technically it is true, that they didn't force us to do this, but it's like, well, you can if you want, but here's what's going to happen to you if you do. And so they hold a threat over them, whether it's legally or financially, and then that way they can say, hey, we didn't make them do it. And they take that chicken way out.
Yeah, because at the same time that was being done, I had another friend of mine who was dealing with the same issue.
Okay.
And his wife is actually was in a whole lot worse shape than Samantha was, and he was being told the same identical things. And, you know, I kind of gave him the same recommendation, you know, call your state representative, call your state senator, you know, call these people who have a little bit of decorum about them to be able to look at those people in those political offices, whether they're appointed or whether they're hired, to go, hey, wait a minute, this is what you are doing. I mean, Joe Biden during the presidential campaign made the on his thing last night was making the case about businesses being closed down. I'm sorry, but it's his governors that are the ones that are closing businesses down.
Yeah, and then those that don't, they accuse of being mass murderers.
So you can't have it both ways. Well, actually, you can have it both ways. They do it all the time.
We've got Tom Arts with us. When we come back, I want to play a political ad that has begun running in, I think Pennsylvania. It's like maybe three or four different states. The Pennsylvania and Arizona. And it's Justice Democrats. It's an organization. They were big Sanders supporters, and now they have an ad in those two battleground states supporting Joe Biden. I want to play it and get your thoughts on it with Tom Martz. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed. Tom Arts with us. I want to play an ad that has begun airing in battleground states of Pennsylvania and Arizona as a part of an effort to support Biden. And this, the organization is Justice Democrats, and they are an organization. They were Bernie Sanders supporters. Now, this ad is, it's targeting largely blacks and Latinos, though they are also hoping that it may nudge some of the so-called suburban women as well. But largely the focus is that minority vote. And here is that campaign ad.
For 6 months, everything is COVID this and COVID that.
Wait, let me back this up. This is a video ad. You're hearing the audio. And the scene is a white woman that is sitting in a lawn chair in her front yard while her white child is running around, throwing things, and being a pain in the butt.
For 6 months, everything is COVID this and COVID that. I lost my job because we're all trying to stay at home to get this under control. And our president does what? Are you fucking kidding me? Look, maybe you don't like the other guy running for president. I get it. I don't like anyone right now. But could you do me a favor? Take 10 minutes this November and fucking vote. Can you do that? Can you do that for me, please? Oh, that is it. Wait till your father gets home.
All right, so that's a 30-second ad, and whenever she says, I don't like anyone right now, she looks at her child with a death stare. Tom, your thoughts on this ad?
Well, you said justice. I'm going to ask you how that's spelled. Is it J-U-S-T-U-S or J-U-S-T-I-C-E?
I-C-E.
Okay. You know, there's a huge difference.
Yes.
That commercial is actually running in my home state of Pennsylvania. My Lord, I'm glad I got out of there.
Well, let me tell you my first thought. As I mentioned, and this is according to the organization, that while they say, yeah, obviously they want to get suburban women to vote as well, but this is, you know, largely minorities. They're really targeting younger black and Latinos. Now, to me, it seems a little misplaced that you would have a white woman with a white child in an ad like that. But the thing that kills me is that once again, when Democrats are targeting minorities, what you get insight into what they think is important to the average minority. You know, with Hillary Clinton talking about hot sauce and that she drinks hot sauce, Kamala Harris talking about smoking dope and listening to rap, and now this ad where they think what's meaningful to minorities is having an ad where a mother is just cussing a lot, not talking about the issues, not saying Joe Biden's the best candidate, but just using the F word three times. And it's like every time they look to demonstrate a connection to the minority community, it is as if you get insight into what they think of them. And it's appalling on some level.
You know, with the amount of time I actually listen to the radio, iHeartRadio now has a thing where there's a blog that the athletes, actors, all kinds of different people are calling in and explaining to other people why it is that they vote. It took me all of about 2.1 seconds to figure out that it was going to be a mind-numbing experience to continue to listen to this, because it was all about, you know, the racist, the bigoted,
right,
the homophobic individual who's in the White House. And it's because people don't understand where the black man has come from. People don't understand the history of black folks. People don't understand this. And we need a president who is more in tune with what it is that what a black man has gone through. So I'm trying to figure out of the five candidates on the ballot, none of them are black.
Right. And Democrats had a number of options for a black
candidate.
Yes, they did. And they said no.
So I guess the application is that they've already figured out that Biden's going to be knocked off, which puts Kamala Harris in there. So we actually want somebody who slept her way to the top.
Well, part of the way there.
She did do a little on her own, but I mean, it's because of Willie Brown.
Yeah,
he was able to.
Yes, according to Willie Brown, I mean, he fully acknowledged that. He helped her get her start by appointing her to a number of different committees. You know, I get irked when I hear people, they talk about how there is a lack of understanding of the history of what black people have gone through in this country. No, I know it, and it was always at the hands of the Democrat Party. It appears as if a lot of people who claim that they know the history of the black plight in this country are the ones who actually don't know it, because they continue to support the party that was the party of slavery, that was the party of Jim Crow laws, that was the party of the KKK, and you know, and then and is the party over these cities that they complain the most about. So there seems to be an absence of knowledge about the history of what it's like to be black in this country among a lot of these black Democrats.
You know, I was born in Baltimore. As a child, spent time in Baltimore. And I, it would not surprise me if I went back to the areas that I got to spend time in, if the same derelict buildings back then are the same derelict buildings now, if they're still standing. So that's I'm 57, so that's been under Democrat control for at least 50-plus years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, generations. You have, I want to say, I don't know if it was Flint or it was one of these communities at one point a year or so ago where something happened. It may have been the issue of water in Flint, Michigan, but I went and I, out of curiosity. I mean, I knew the answer to some degree, but I thought, you know, I wonder, someone who lives in this particular area, every single one of their representatives who, and I, from the local level, county level, state rep, state senator level, U.S. congressional level, gubernatorial level, it was Democrat for about three generations back. And I thought to myself, you have people that are complaining today about the situation that they're in, who never once in their entire life, never once, has had anyone representing them other than a Democrat. Not one single time on any single level. And that's when it struck me that I'm no longer entertaining any suggestions that I, as a person, contribute to helping the plight of those in the black community, when in the cities they're not willing to even change what they do. If you're not willing to do something as simple as change the way that you vote, change the people that you put in power, why should anyone else do anything? I mean, if you're not willing to help yourself, why should anyone else? And incidentally, you can't help people who won't help themselves, so it won't do any good anyway.
Well, Flint actually is a classic example of what goes awry when people do not pay attention to their government, because mm-hmm. they hit some hard financial straits and they were going to go belly up. So, and I think they were just about on the verge of bankruptcy, and the only way they saw themselves to be able to get out of it was to start, instead of buying their water from Detroit and have it shipped in, they were just going to take it right out of the Flint River, or the river right there, which is, you know, a long, long time ago, they had done that to begin with, and then Detroit made it cheaper for them to be able to do it on, you know, to buy it from them. And then the governor got the, he was the fall guy for this whole deal, because he had to appoint somebody to oversee the finances of Flint. And then, of course, when the agreement was brokered for them to start pulling the water out of the river, then it contaminated all those houses because of all the lead pipes. And then you've got the predominant black leadership in Flint blaming the two white guys for the problems that they were having.
Well, and
everyone forgot that it wasn't the water that started this problem.
Right. And it could not be more perfect, the issue itself, where everyone who had a hand in that resulted in that dirty water were from a party that accused Republicans of not wanting clean water. Accuse Republicans that if they're in charge, your children won't have clean water to drink. And again, and this is where so much of my frustration, and where I've kind of just said, you know what, I don't care anymore what happens in that scenario, because the very people who vote those folks in charge and that scream and yell and complain will vote the exact same people and leave them in charge again. or if not them, you know, just a carbon copy of them from the same party. And you know, not to be repetitive here, but if you're going to continue to do that, why should I pay attention to your cries for help? If people throw you a life preserver while you're drowning, and that life preserver is the ability to vote for somebody else in charge, and every time you push it away, then I'm going to quit throwing life preservers. You know, you can't complain at me that you're drowning when you have opportunities to grab a lifeline or at least a potential lifeline, and you refuse to accept it.
You know what the definition of Stockholm syndrome is, right?
Well, I know what it is. I mean, you have like a specific definition. It's when you start to associate with your captors.
Since you know what that is, then why couldn't you make the case that people who are indebted to their political parties suffer from Stockholm syndrome?
Well, it could be. Could very well be. Tom Arts, as always, thank you, sir. I appreciate your time this morning. And enjoy the wedding. Tell your son congratulations, even though I don't know him. He doesn't know me. But tell him anyhow. That'll be top of mind for you, I'm sure, tomorrow.
They actually listen to you where he works. So.
Oh, well, fantastic. If he's listening, congratulations, and definitely enjoy the day.
All right, man. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too, Tom Martz. Thank you, sir. Here is Don Luzader with the latest traffic update. I'm Nick Reed, Springfield's Talk 104.1.